with different ones and receiving like maps and blueprints and things like that. So, been encountering wisdom a lot, and she's taken me to a couple really good places, so new things that I hadn't ever experienced before. So, it's been good. I'm learning. Been watching all your mentoring sessions with all the other people, just haven't been able to get on live, but I've been staying up on everything, working through all that the alpha stuff, going through all the spirit building exercises and all that kind of stuff, and pretty much just trying to get through all that. So I haven't really looked in that in the alpha. After you get through the spirit building, all those different things you're doing, praying in tongues and all that, what's after that in that module?
The next module is first love.
So
So,
after the spirit building, is that pretty much it on the second one?
yeah, I mean, yeah, and basically, that second module is really about building the spirit, looking to, engage the eyes of your heart and open the eyes of your spirit, so that everything else then being able to hear the voice of God. So everything else will do depends on that functioning, because when we engage first love, and when we then go through the garden of the heart and do the dance floor and those things, and when we then engage in other aspects, without actually being able to see or perceive or to engage, it'll be very difficult to follow the pathway. So it's key really there, really, for those, and I'm totally aware that some people are way ahead of that, and it's really easy, and that's basic stuff. It's just without having sort of understood the exercises and the way, then when people then need mentoring, it's very difficult to mentor them if you haven't done it, and so it's not just for those that are engaging now, it's for those who are coming, so that we will be able to help them where they are. When they have their struggles, we'll have our own personal testimonies of, well, when I did this, this is what worked for me, or I learned to develop this, or this was helpful. Because there will be people who, find it really easy, and there'll be people who find it quite difficult, depending on their background and what they've been into and various things like that, So, yeah, that's really, as the spirit building stuff is, it's about becoming a lifestyle. Because if it's just, oh, well, I've listened to the material, yeah, done a couple of exercises, but I'm not living it, then it's really just more theoretical teaching. So it's really about actually it becoming a lifestyle of engagement, that I can hear the voice of God and talk to him and have a two-way conversation. I can have the eyes of my eyes or o heart open, my imagination is engaged, therefore I can y use that to be able to see into the realm of the spirit, and also my spirit needs to be also open so that the eyes of my spirit can see into the realm of the spirit around me. If I can't see into that angelic realm, I won't be able to engage it. And I'm, talking about see in the broadest sense. It's not just vision, but it is perception and being able to engage. And my spirit is much more knowing, so I'm totally aware of where I am and what I'm doing, without necessarily it being a full-on vision, which means it's much more flexible. I can be in heaven and I'm driving down the road. It's really difficult to do that when you're in a full-on vision and you can't see the road. So you have to be able to, engage it in that way. So yeah, and some people may take 12 months to do that module and practice enough and need ministry to help them unblock certain things, or God will highlight certain things that need unblocking. Some people will do it in a few weeks, and they'll be like, "Yeah, because I'm already there. That's great." It's not a race, and it's not, and everyone can take it at their own pace, really. And the next step, really, then is for those who are actually living that out, then to recruit other people to do it. And find, okay, because we want them to take it out. I won't be able to engage with everybody who's going to do this down the line. So I want to help other people to engage, because I'm engaging with them. So, you know, I am pulling together all the groups at the moment. So I've got 20 groups of people that in January I'm going to try and connect with, those who want to or those who can. You know, that's going to stretch my schedule somewhat. Because they go from minus 8 to plus 10 time zones.
Oh, wow.
So I've got the Pacific coast at one end to Australia at the other end. So it's a pretty wide area of time. I'm having to try and sort my schedule out to be able to engage. You know, and then we'll see, you know. It's like from there, then we'll just help see where it goes from there. But I'm working the First Love module out now with the church here, and so, you know, sort of a few weeks, months ahead. But, you know, but it's great. I mean, the First Love thing was, I was expecting to do one session, really, and it's developed into a whole engagement that I've personally had, and I think we talked about it last time. I think, did we do an exercise last time at the end with engaging First Love? I think we did. But it's, you know, it's really just a depth of relationship and engagement that helps us to manifest that around our lives as well. It's got to flow through us. Opening the First Love gate is just the first step of seeing all the gates open and a manifestation of the kingdom around us and radiating light and emanating frequency and having love touch people through our lives as well. So, but I am at the moment, I've been requested by a few people to get together with leaders or people who've got groups of churches or groups of people who are looking to transition into this whole thing, because some are struggling. You know, I've been there. I know how difficult it is to take a group of people who are all at different stages, and some are really in opposition and they don't get it, and all the religious spirits and the political spirits kick off, and it's like you get a whole, you can have a whole mess. So a number of them said, look, is there any way we could actually meet with others who are going through the same process and support each other and encourage each other? So I'm sort of looking to do that at the minute for those who've got groups and churches who are looking to go this route. And there's a number up in the Washington area and Oregon area that I'm looking at all the way. So, okay. All right, so... Good. Where do you want to start today? So, have you got any questions or things people want to share?
Hey, Mike, I got a question for you.
Okay, go for it.
In the Bible, there's a lot of emphasis on genealogy, and, you know, you can tell the Jews, obviously, put a high importance on their lineage. How do you reconcile that with the order of Melchizedek concept of wiping that out?
Okay. I get that. The issue with genealogy was one in the Old Testament of ensuring the line of the seed of the woman would eventually bring forth the seed of Abraham and the seed of David, seed of Jesus, effectively being the along that lineage. So everything was traced back to show the progression that brought us into the new covenant. And now we're in the new covenant, there's one new man that we're all together in Christ, effectively. I mean, essentially, if you think about it, there is no Jew, Gentile, male, female in the kingdom. We're all equal in the kingdom, all in relationship with God. And that physical genealogy was not about their inheritance from their mother, father, whatever. It was more about the progression from Adam and Eve and them producing the seed that Jesus would come from. Now, when it comes to the order of Melchizedek, you're talking about having no genealogy, and you're talking about that from the perspective of that which is of the path of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, rather than the tree of life. So our being sons of God and having a destiny and a heritage which goes back before the foundation of the world, and having a book which is written about us in God's heart to reveal our destiny, is very much our new genealogy, if you like. We're now sons of God. We're being restored back into sonship. We've been adopted into his family. We're now part of God's people, who weren't once God's people, you know, and there we are. But what we carry in terms of earthly genealogy and generational genealogy contains bloodline, seed line, iniquity, which has been visited in that physical DNA, and that is what needs to be conformed into the image of Jesus. So in Romans 8 it says, you know, we are predestined to be conformed to his image. In other words, there is a mold that's been made, our shape, that we're supposed to be like. And where we're not like that, because our physical DNA and that history and genealogy there has stops us being that, we're supposed to be transformed, not conformed to the world, or not in the world's mold, but be transformed by the renewing of our mind so that we can outwork our destiny in fullness. And so there is a spiritual heritage which belongs to us, which we definitely don't want to lose. And for a lot of us, we've had that robbed from us by the enemy, because we have not received from our earthly parents the spiritual heritage which should have been ours. You know, in some senses, you know, you get someone like Bill Johnson who says, well, I'm a fifth generation guy. You know, I'm not. You know, my heritage was stolen, and I know where it is in Satan's trophy room, and I'm going to get it back. And so there's that spiritual heritage, but the physical heritage, we do not want anything that is going to hinder us being who God has created us to be. So that's really where the no genealogy comes in, because very clearly we need to be now in the genealogy of Jesus, because he is the high priest after the order of Melchizedek, who has the forerunner for us, and we're now in him. And it's in him we get our heritage, if you like, and our spiritual heritage from being in him. Not being in our parents, although, you know, there is definitely something that we can receive spiritually from them, and we should, but definitely not in a soul sense. You know, I don't want my genealogy and my seed and my genetic material being determined by sin and iniquity, if you like. That's what needs to be transformed and changed so I can truly be transfigured. And literally, my physical body, which is subject to death because of sin, when I am now born again and I am now crucified with Christ, then that old thing has gone, and therefore I'm no longer subject to sin because of what Adam brought, because I'm now in Christ, you know, as the second Adam who came to undo everything the first Adam did in a wrong sense. And so now I can eat his flesh, drink his blood, and I can live forever. I think we may have talked about that last time as well. It's because that actually is now my inheritance, is eternal life and everlasting life and living forever. So that which is of the old order, which brings death within my DNA, I need now to be resequenced to bring life. And so it's iniquity which brings death. It's wrong seed which is associated with death, and therefore now I need to have the right seed which is associated with life, and therefore there needs to be a process of transformation to take place. I mean, and obviously it takes some time, you know, to be transfigured. You know, I'm not radiating glory that people can yet see, so there's still some transfiguration to take place within my physical body, so that I will actually physically radiate glory from that which was within me, within my spirit. So my spirit, soul, and body can be one in unity with him and be one spirit with him, so that the kingdom can be manifest through me and around me, and I can create an atmosphere and I can resonate with the frequency of heaven and the frequency of love, and that will change everything that I engage, including creation. Because creation is groaning at a low frequency, waiting for high frequency sons of God to be revealed so that we can change it and bring it back into the heavenly frequency and alignment that it was always intended to have. So that means we need to start vibrating at a different frequency, you know, and that's why we have to be transformed. Because what is contained from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil can only vibrate at a low frequency. And that's not life-giving. But the tree of life enables us to vibrate at a frequency in which, if we're plugged into that, if it likes, it talks about in Psalms being like a tree planted by streams of water whose leaves don't wither and fruit is always in season. And that's what my life is supposed to be like. And as it effectively resonates that, as I come into agreement with it and I then manifest it around me, through me. So that's really how I see this. You know, we are in a new covenant now, and it's a new order. You know, and for that, I definitely don't need old genealogy functioning. Yeah. Does that sort of cover it?
Yeah, that's great. I appreciate it.
Okay.
So what you're saying is that it's all about transformation, us transforming. So is the idea of going into heaven and relating to heavenly things not only to us, but also to bring that transformation back down here and transform here? So is that the goal, more or less?
Yeah. I mean, in a sense, it's like Eden, the Garden of God, was connected to the Garden Eastern Eden in the original creation, and God walked in both gardens, and so did Adam and Eve. They walked in both gardens. They had access. It was like the physical and the spiritual realm had no blockages to access, because Adam's physical spirit was, his body and soul were contained within his spirit, not the other way around. And therefore, he could walk into the realms of the spirit realms. His body could go into that realms also, because it was contained within his spirit. Now, when they sinned, that imploded, so that his spirit was then separated. And obviously, you have the access to the tree of life blocked by the cherubim and the fiery sword, indicating that we could no longer walk. And then the physical garden, which was on the planet, if you like, was then removed from that spiritual sphere and put out into time and space. It wasn't originally created in the same time-space continuum as it is now. It was put out into and separated from that time-space continuum so that sin could be contained within time. And when time is no longer, then there will be no record of sin. And that was God's way of dealing with it. And so now that the pathway has been opened, and literally what's happened is, the fact is now within our spirit now becomes the place where God dwells. So in essence, the equivalent of Eden is now in me, because I have a realm of the kingdom, his garden in me, in my spirit. And as I open my first love gate, invite him to come and be enthroned in my life and then fill me, as my gates are open, then his river of life and his presence engage my garden, which is now my heart. So my heart now needs to be cultivated and tended, connected to heaven, and restored back to its original condition. And the original garden had the river coming out of Eden, going into that garden, and then breaking into four rivers and going out to water the earth. Now, when my heart is transformed by the river of life, and I am brought into oneness with him and with myself, body, soul, and spirit, then that river is supposed to be rivers of living water, which actually then flow through me. John 7, from your innermost being, literally that meant a hollow place, which was the cavity where my spirit dwells. From that flows rivers of living water. And that is supposed to flow around me to create an atmosphere of the kingdom that's on the inside around me. So my circumstances are governed by the kingdom, which is flowing and connected to heaven. And so everything, therefore, flows out from that connection. So when I begin to encounter the Spirit of God, the Father, Son, in my spirit as a dwelling place of God, I begin to vibrate with their frequency. I carry their light. That's why the river of life, everything vibrates, is to do with water. Then that's supposed to flow around me, and I produce an energy field, if you like, of the kingdom around my life, because I irradiate that from inside out. And then that frequency begins to call creation, which is operating at a frequency which is so low that it recognizes where it once was. When I carry that frequency of heaven around me, it recognizes it and it responds. And it releases up to me that which belongs to us, because we are given dominion. And so once I begin to radiate that, and I'm vibrating at that frequency, and you could call it love if you like, because God is love and it's an expression of who he really is, then everything responds. And another analogy of that would be in Ezekiel 47. It's like the river that was flowing under the threshold coming out of the east gate, which then got ankle deep, knee deep. So as it got deeper and deeper, it eventually was so deep that it produced life wherever it went. And it turned salt water into fresh, because it went out into the sea, which is a picture of the world without God. Because it was always the land that was God's abode, and the sea always represented the nations. And so as the river went out from us, it is supposed to transform and bring life. And it talks about having trees again there with fruit and with leaves for healing, because my whole life is supposed to be healing and terraforming, bringing creation back into its original order. But it starts flowing from heaven through me, because I am a gate. I am a dwelling place of God. I am a mountain which has the authority of the kingdom, and I'm also a gateway. You have the story of Jacob, it was like, where he was in Bethel with an open heaven and a ladder going up into heaven. His description was, this is none other than the house of God and the gateway of heaven. And that is now me. I am now a house of God, you're now a house of God, and you're a gateway of heaven, so that heaven can be manifested in your spheres of government. Now, we can't just go and, oh great, I'm going to take the world today, because we have to operate within our spheres of government. And some of those spheres are wider than others, and they expand, because there's no end to the increase of his government. So when I establish that around me, it is supposed to expand, as God's kingdom is manifested through me. And literally, the kingdom is at hand. When Jesus came, it was like the kingdom is at hand. So when people engage me, they should be engaging the rule of God. And what did the kingdom at hand look like? It looked like healing. It looked like miracles. It looked like deliverance. It looked like a authorization over nature. It looked like, hey, I'm taking back the planet. And I can walk on water, and I can go through things, and I can multiply things, and I can produce food out of nothing, and I can do all those things, because I am living connected to the rules of heaven, the laws of heaven, not the laws of earth. Because I'm an ambassador of another kingdom under its spiritual laws, not the physical laws of this dimension, because I can supersede those. Hence, I don't need to die. Hence, I can see manifest healing and life wherever I go, you know, and that's God's intention. Now, I obviously want to do that to its fullness in every area of my life, and that's why I'm working at transformation, making sure there's nothing in my gateways that block that, making sure there's nothing in my DNA that blocks that, nothing within my heart that blocks it, so that the soil of my heart can be conducive to good soil and good fruit, a hundredfold return, you know, in from my heart. So yeah, it's a process that's what we're supposed to do.
So seeing in this transformation of your own life, have you personally seen yourself walk in greater manifestation of those healings and things that Jesus did? Have you, can you say that?
Yeah, I can, but my mandate at this point in time is to teach people how to engage this in heaven. And if I focus on what I can do rather than what I'm doing, then that often can take the focus, because I don't want to just operate in gifts and things like that. I want to establish places that live like that. So I'm looking to equip others so that we can live as a city of refuge where we're all living under the dimension of heaven. And so, yes, I can do some of those things. I know how to do them, but I'm not authorized or mandated to do them all the time, because actually that I know what that would do. Now, my mandate is to equip a Joshua generation to be able to do those things. I don't want to be like the Moses generation, which was actually all about individual people doing it. It's about all of us doing it. And so I'm very sensitive now about laying hands on people or manifesting some of those things, because I don't want to draw attention to that as opposed to what leads up to that. Because I know people always want someone to do it. You know, they want a mediator who can do those things. I can do them, and sometimes I'm authorized to do it, and I will release healing, and I see miracles and deliverance and a lot of stuff. But that isn't my daily mandate at this point in time. I know that it will become much more that way in the future when we've established a city of refuge. And actually, we have got governmental authority here that has mountains of healing and wholeness and things like that, in which I'm equipping people to be on those mountains so that they can do it, and I'm releasing that through them. Because I know the danger of it becoming a one-person thing. And that's why, you know, a couple of years ago, God, you know, started to encourage me, or basically just said, look, you know, I know when I'm authorized to do things and I know when I'm not. But I authorize others to, because it's their part of their destiny. And I'd rather the attention be on, hey, we have a healing mountain and we have a healing group that are ministering healing, than on, hey, let's go and see Mike because he can heal. You know, and so I am sensitive to the issues that can arise through that. And so I tend to hold that and encourage others to do it, because they can do it just as well as I can. And if I do it, then sometimes they wouldn't. So I take a step back very often and encourage others to do most of the ministry. You know, but I definitely can do it. I know how to. You know, I know how to walk on water, I know how to walk through things, and I know how to transform matter and do those things. So I can do it, but I wouldn't do it as a party trick or to draw attention to the fact that I can do it, when I want to equip everyone to do it, and that means everyone really learning how to build their spirit and to engage in the same way. You know, and you know, my focus very much at this season is about engaging heaven, so that I can equip people to rule from heaven, so that heaven can then be manifested on earth. Because, you know, all that I was talking about earlier really is the pathway of relationship, where God, I'm a God channel, and God channels himself through me to touch the world. But we're also sons in responsibility, where we have to learn to govern and to rule and to establish kingdom government in heaven, to bring the spheres of government, to clear the atmosphere. All that stuff you can't do from here, you have to do from there. And you can't do the other stuff really without the flow of the spirit flowing, unless you're doing it illegitimately in the wrong way. So yeah, there's a whole process of that stuff really.
Shifting gears just a little, you mentioned City of Refuge. Okay. And that whole Melchizedek order, and us getting to that point. My question is, for individuals who have that peace, that like my city that I live in has been termed a future city of refuge.
Yeah.
So because of that term, there are many people who are looking at it from a different angle, more of an earthly perspective,
yeah,
and are looking, well, we want to make sure we have extra rooms in our houses, we want to make sure we have food, when whatever happens is going to happen, that we'll be prepared to help others, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But they're not looking at it from the Melchizedek order. Okay, they're not looking at it from a heavenly perspective. How would you help them to understand a different perspective? I don't know how else to ask that.
I know what you're saying, yeah. It isn't easy because of the mindsets that those, when you use similar words, but you have a totally different meaning for the words, it's very difficult for people to realize you're talking about something else. So you have to find points of intersection that indicate there is something different to the meaning of the words. And so when I look to engage people around these sorts of issues, I look at it from a spiritual kingdom government rather than a natural earthly one. And so I try and use illustrations that indicate that these things are not just earthly, but actually are in fact heavenly, and therefore if we do not have the kingdom functioning in heaven, then it can't manifest on earth. So, you know, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So I would always say to someone, okay, we're looking to establish a city of refuge. That is a place where it would be under the government of heaven. You know, we're not under the government of the earth. The earthly government may be totally collapsed, or whatever systems of kingdom may be totally collapsed on the earth, but we're not subject to those things. So this has to be a supernatural kingdom expression, not a natural one. I'm not saying it doesn't have a natural outworking, because it does. But everything that we do within that city of refuge is like an embassy of heaven. We're not subject to the nation we're living in. We're subject to the laws of the nation we're sent from, and we're ambassadors of reconciliation from heaven. And so I try and always connect it back to, if we're not engaging that realm, then we're only operating under the atmosphere of the earth, not above it, to bring God's government to this realm. And so I use scriptures like, you know, come boldly to the throne of grace. And it's like everyone will know that. And I try and encourage people to say, well, what's your experience of that? Not obviously wanting to put them down or make them feel inadequate in any way, but trying to shell up. You know, there is a new dimension that God is opening up to these scriptures so that we can actually engage in the reality of them, not just the shadow of them, which is on earth. So, okay, have you been to the throne of grace? Well, yeah, I pray all the time. No. Have you been to the throne? Where is the throne of grace? Well, it's in heaven. So have you been, because it says come boldly or draw near to the throne of grace. Where is it? It's in heaven. So I try and get people to see these things are in heaven, and we have got access to engage them in heaven. And once we've engaged them there, then they can manifest on the earth. And so there's, you know, helping people to understand that Jesus never said store a whole load of food. What he said was, hey, you can multiply food. You know, he didn't say store a whole load of money. He actually said, if you need this, then you can manifest it, whether it comes out of a fish's mouth or anything else. You know, you don't need a whole load of weapons, because actually if anyone seeks to touch you, you can disappear. You know, there's a spiritual, the Joshua generation operating in a spiritual dimension, not a natural one. So we have to equip people to operate in the fullness of the power of the Spirit, which is all supernatural. Look at what is just Jesus' life. You know, that's what we're looking at. We're looking at for a manifestation of the kingdom being at hand and outworked as he outworked it. But he described to Nicodemus where he was and how he was doing this. In John 3:13, I am in heaven. You know, and the Amplified Version says, I am dwelling, have my dwelling in heaven, basically now while I'm talking to you. And Jesus only did what he saw the Father doing. How do we see what the Father's doing? Where is the Father? Well, yes, he's in us to a degree, but actually we know he's enthroned in the realms of heaven. So if we're going to see what he's doing, we have to engage to see what he's doing, then that authorizes us to do it. And I don't see the Father in heaven storing up a whole load of this, that, and the other in the same way that we would see people trying to do it a natural way. Now, I'm not saying they prophetically, those guys have not caught hold of something. They're just doing it in an old order. You know, and the old order would be, let's do this in this natural way because we're preparing. And it, again, some of it comes down to what their expectation is of what's coming. And if they're looking for some tribulation and some Jesus coming to rapture and rescue us, well, then they're not looking for a kingdom that's going to be established on earth as it is in heaven. So they may well be looking, well, we're going to set up a city of refuge to prepare for because, well, we're going to be rescued anyway, so we're just going to keep ourselves safe until Jesus comes and takes us out of it. Rather than, no, we're setting up an embassy or a beachhead on earth which is going to expand so the kingdom of God fills the earth. And we expand the government of God to bring dominion and to bring his kingdom in that way. So it's a totally different future that they're looking for. And that, again, will be a very difficult discussion with people because if their theology is one of rescue rather than victory, then what they're doing is out of fear rather than out of faith, because actually, no, Jesus is coming back for a spotless bride without wrinkle, without blemish, who has fulfilled its function in establishing the kingdom. And the kingdom will fill the earth, as it says in Daniel, and it says the glory of God will fill the earth. And, you know, that is what, you know, I'm signing up for. You know, it's like to bring the planet back into its original condition. And Jesus said, you know, basically, heaven is keeping me until the restoration of all things. So I'm not coming until everything's done. You know, when he does come then, that's it. He sorts it out. He's coming for a victorious bride, not a defeated one. And that, of course, has a major impact on what people are believing and expecting. So they may well have heard City of Refuge, and to them it means, hey, a place of protection during this tribulation that's coming. If they believe that they're going through the tribulation or half of it or whatever, depending on their theology of eschatology. For me, I don't believe any of that, so I'm believing for the kingdom to be established, and we are part of that kingdom to bring the government of heaven to transform the earth into that in that way. So in the future, I don't believe anything is going to be like it is now. You know, I do believe a massive shaking and shifting coming. And what's left is the kingdom, or the mountain of the house of the Lord, which is raised up above all the other hills, and so that they're all going to come streaming to those that are operating in true cities of refuge, because that is where the health is, that is where the water is, that's where the power is, that's where everything is, because it's coming out of heaven and connected to heaven. And that's why people are going to run to us, because we have the answers to whatever question they've got. You know, whereas none of the other systems of government that have been established on the earth, which have come out of the pathway of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, will have those answers. Because that is what will be shaken, people's confidence in those earthly mountains of authority which they have put their trust in, whether it's government, education, health, any of those things, none of those things will have the answer, but the mountain of the house of the Lord will be raised up, and therefore cities of refuge will be established all over the earth that will be places that will expand that government, because there's no end to the increase of his government, you know. And we're those that he's increasing it through, because the kingdom is within us, and we're in the kingdom. It's not an easy one, you know, and a lot of people just won't accept it because they'll stay in the wilderness and they'll stay part of the Moses generation. There's a whole generation that haven't embraced it. And actually, I think we're at a crucial point in that next year, I think we're a whole generation has passed since prophecies that went forth about the harvest, the billionfold harvest. And rather than equipping a generation of Joshua's and Caleb's to mentor that harvest which is coming, most people have ignored the prophecy and basically just carried on playing church. And reality is that generation is going to die in the wilderness unless they're willing to cross. And there's no sign that most of them will at this point in time, but God is going to give them the opportunity to cross into this new order dimension of the Spirit, represented by obviously the River Jordan and crossing over into the Promised Land. Whereas, you know, I've heard prophecies being brought. I think Chuck Pierce brought one, Rick Joyner brought one, of, hey, the whole church is coming up to the river. Are we going to cross? And actually, that's the choice people are going to get. Are you going to cross over into the new, or are you going to stay with the old? And God's judgment coming is, I'm leaving the old because I'm in the new, and I'm only going to be occupying that which looks like me, which is why we have to set up cities of refuge which have benches of three and heavenly government and a pattern of heaven on earth, because that's what he's going to come and occupy, not something that doesn't look like him. And anything that does not reflect heaven isn't going to be occupied. And what reflects heaven isn't a mountain which is like that, is a mountain that's like that. The reflection is we are now operating in government which releases people into destiny, does not sit on top like Moses and rule everybody. We are the foundation on which people can be built and released into their destiny to fulfill what God's called them to do as part of the blueprints that he's releasing. So totally different dimension, and we're right at the edge of that. Bob Jones prophesied that harvest in 1975 in August, and actually we're coming up now to 40 years since that has been prophesied, and I think that's, for me, God has told me that's a significant point. And there's going to be a major shift that starts to take place after that. So, yeah, there we go.
Mike, what is your expectation on a timeline as far as seeing these cities become reality, where there's a night and day difference in the territory around these cities? Do you have any perspective on that?
Yeah. Basically, I believe we've got a generation from next year. And I know Ian has been to 2057 in Clayton and has seen what it's like in 2057. I think some people have seen into that, and because their mindsets and eschatology does not allow them to see that as what will be in this age, they see it as the millennium or something else they call it. Whereas I think they're seeing a reality of the massive change that there is because there's government established, but they're calling it something else because it doesn't fit into their time frame. But Ian, I know, he's been there, I've spoken to him, he's I've heard him talk about it as well, and it's very different. He doesn't go into it in great detail, but there are power sources that are different. It is very different. And so I believe we have a generation. Which makes sense. God works generationally. He works in generations. That's why we need a generation of Joshuas and Calebs to equip that generation that's coming to be those storehouses and to be those cities of refuge. And so I believe there's going to be a period of great harvest in which we will see that billionfold, or say 20% of the world population will come to Christ and will be equipped supernaturally. And this comes generally, it's prophetically, this is pictured in Joseph and the 7 good years in which the storehouses were full and they took 20% of the produce and kept it in the storehouses. And then the 7 mean years, or the 7 bad years, in which then the whole world came to those storehouses because everything was a famine everywhere else. And so I see that that's what we're going to see outworked in this generation to come, so that those places can fully be established. But we need to see, A, those that are able to mentor them, which is the Joshua generation, and the harvest, which is the generation that's coming. And I'm not talking about a young people when I say generation. I'm talking about those who are not yet saved. And, of course, even when they crossed over into the Promised Land, the generation that crossed over of fighting men were anything from 19 up to 59. You know that, because it was the generation from 20 to 59 who, or older, who died in the wilderness because they refused to cross. And it was those who were below that age who then 40 years later could have been 59 and below. You know, and so that to me is a generation that's coming. I'm not saying only 59-year-olds can be saved. I'm just saying it's talking about a generation. It will be a united generation of young, old, coming together, called to a supernatural lifestyle and empowered to live as ambassadors of heaven on earth. And so everything will be very different. People have a problem with that, because there's an expectation that, well, yeah, things will be different, but not really much, because they haven't seen it and they can't really envisage it. But it will be very different, you know. So we are engaging with certain things to prepare that, because some of the things God has said for us is, if you're going to have a Joshua generation, Joshua created a nation. So, and therefore he brought government to a nation. So there's got to be a Joshua nation of how we administer kingdom, you know, and that is going to be very different, you know, and we will have the power source. So we will be able to divert rivers. We will be able to move mountains. We will be able to do things that are only used to used as sort of euphemisms for spiritualizing it, rather than actually, no, we will be able to do those things. Because we will have the power to establish heaven on earth in those places, and it will be very different, you know. And I know people, oh, this sounds really far-fetched. Well, you know, go back 50 years, and some of the things that are happening now would sound really far-fetched then. You know, Star Trek in the 60s, you know, had a whole load of things which they just saw as science fiction, which are now science fact. You know, things have shifted really quickly. And we're just talking about technology. We're not talking about spiritual dimensional engagement, of being able to access the dimensions of the spirit and to bring those dimensions into this one and to manifest quantum dimensions of things. Because we're now operating in those realms. And that those realms will be starting to operate through us. And that's a whole different ballgame. When we have restored the abilities to operate in sound and light that they originally had, things will be very different in what we do and how we do it. Because we just see it right now in these age terms, whereas actually there is a restoration that will bring us back and restore the bandwidths which were lost and the abilities that are encoded within our DNA, which will be resequenced to change us. You know, and, you know, that's where some of these things, you know, Hollywood produces foretastes and glimpses of this stuff, because there is a prophetic portal, you know, and so a lot of the stuff that you're seeing actually is not that far from the truth. Some of it is just the interpretation of what it ends is not correct, but actually some of the principles of things you see of, you know, superheroes and things that, where we have dimension and authority to do things, which they had, you know, and that stuff is going to be restored. Just we won't be wearing capes, you know, masks, you know. So, yeah.
So do you think there's going to be one place on Earth where this is established and then it trickles out, or do you think this is going to pop up in several different places at the same around the same time?
Oh, basically, there will always be forerunners. So you're always going to get those who go ahead and forge the grain and take territory and begin to establish these things. The vision that I've been given of it is that it's like there are going to be pillars of fire that represent these areas. I think it talks about in Zechariah about having places with walls of fire. And that's literally what a description of what these cities of refuge are like. They're going to have walls of fire. And in a sense, that what will take place is that they will come out of new wells. Some of them will be old wells that have been unblocked, but they carry not water, but oil. And when you put fire to oil, you get a big lot of fire. And so these pillars of fire represent that. And when they put these pillars up, essentially what I've seen vision-wise is that those pillars will begin to form a canopy of fire which overlaps. So the different pillars in different regions and different cities and different areas will overlap to form a canopy which will clear the atmosphere of the earth and will give us access to bring government across the earth from heaven, because the atmosphere will be cleared. And so there'll be lots of names for them. You know, some of them revival centers, apostolic resource centers, habitations of God's presence, all sorts of different names, but they will all be referring to places on earth that are ruled under the government of heaven and are operating in a supernatural dimension to bring transformation to creation effectively. So I think there will be lots of them. Some may well come first, and they will be forerunners, and they will pass on and mentor others and release others. But actually, some of them will be totally independent, just how God does it. They may not look the same in a way. It's not like, oh, they're all going to be mirror images of each other. They'll reflect the government of God, and they will operate according to the blueprints that they've been given, each one of them having their own heavenly blueprint for what it looks like in that city, that region, that area, that nation. They'll all be operating according to blueprint, and therefore unique, but having the same principles of government and the same purpose in manifesting the sons of God on the earth so that we can bring creation into the liberty of that sonship and free it from the bondage that it's in right now. So we're not just talking about people here, we're talking about taking back the creative order. And that isn't just obviously our planet. You know, it's like we start here and actually we expand. You know, now you think, well, how can that happen? Well, you know, when Jesus starts to get involved in this stuff and we really start to see manifestations of things, nothing's impossible. You know, and you know, and we're, you know, we think of time now, you know, time, and you know, go back, you know, if you just look into history and see the difference in technology that took place between 1000 and 1500, you know, it was pretty slow, and you know, they were still pretty much doing similar things. There was some stuff. Then you go then from 1500 to 1700, well, you go from 2000 or 1900 to 2000, and I mean, it's just a whole different ball game. And you know, there have been prophecies that have been released that God will do what he did in a year and a month. You know, and what it took a month, it took a day. You know, what it took a day, it took a second. You know, things can be accelerated tremendously when we start to bring government, when we start to set the agenda of government, when we start to bring heavenly government, when we use the angelic armies that are the hosts of heaven to begin to engage the atmosphere of the earth and to begin to do their part, because that's what we're supposed to do in cooperation with them. When we begin to operate in the Galactic Council, and when they're not just a few from this generation, but when this generation rises up to fulfill those 70 places on the Galactic Council, when we're operating in chancellorship and in the realms of the kingdom, because those all those things were for us. You know, walk in his ways, outwork his laws, you will have charge of the house, charge of the courts, and you will have access amongst those who are standing in the assembly of the court of God. And that's our destiny. You know, yeah, we might just be learning right now to have operating in the precepts of God in the kingdom, but we will have charge of the house, the mountain of the house of the Lord, and we will have charge of the courts of heaven. And that's when we will start to legislate things which will change and transform things dramatically. Right now we're just learning how, but once we engage the 12 chancellors' houses and we learn the protocol there, and we look at, you know, Metatron's cube and the dimensions that that has in terms of the Sapphire Cube, and there's a whole lot of stuff God's releasing right now that I'm having some fun with, and other people are as well. Just, hey, there's a whole lot of stuff I didn't even realize 6 months ago that I realize now. You know, and I'm beginning to engage that. And, you know, legislation from heaven can do tremendous things in accelerating things. And that's what we're going to learn how to do. You know, and that will change things, you know, very, very quickly if necessary. So, yeah. All right. Okay. Okay. All right. Well.